Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 11th day of January, Anno Domini 2025. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Because here comes the news. The Linux Foundation has announced the formation of a new group, the Supporters of Chromium-Based Browsers, aimed at funding and advancing the development of browsers built on the open-source Chromium code base. Founding members of the alliance include Google, Microsoft, Meta, and Opera. The Linux Foundation said the new group will provide a neutral space for developers, software vendors, and the broader open source community to better contribute to the Chromium ecosystem and collaborate on Chromium-based projects. The foundation emphasized that existing Chromium projects will remain under their respective developers' control and will not be absorbed by the new alliance. Instead, the new group will operate under the Linux Foundation to remove barriers to innovation, expand adoption, and ensure that projects within the Chromium ecosystem receive the resources they need to thrive. Google explained that the Linux Foundation was selected to manage the alliance and its funding due to its proven track record of open governance, prioritizing transparency, inclusivity, and community-driven development. The company also expressed its enthusiasm for the initiative, noting that it was thrilled to have garnered support from Meta, Microsoft, and Opera. Microsoft and Opera also released statements praising the new initiative and reaffirming their commitment to the Chromium ecosystem. Microsoft stated that it would continue contributing to the Chromium code base to improve Edge and other Chromium-based browsers. Opera expressed optimism that the alliance would allow it to take an even more active role in Chromium's development and future direction. Many popular browsers, including Google Chrome, Microsoft Edge, Opera, Brave, and Vivaldi, are all built on the open-source Chromium code base. The two most widely used non-Chromium browsers are Mozilla Firefox and Apple Safari. Firefox relies on Mozilla's proprietary Quantum Gecko engine, while Safari is powered by Apple's WebKit. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is: the last 2 weeks have gone a little crazy with choices in the poll, I think. The Linux Foundation announces the Supporters of Chromium-Based Browsers. And your choices are: I'm excited to see what the future holds. I mean, how much more can they do with a browser? Wait, my browser runs Chromium? Wait, what's Chromium? I'll stick with Firefox, thanks. Safari forever. Lynx is the only true browser. And browser? What is browser? So far, we have 23 votes. And I'll stick with Firefox, thanks, is in the lead. 26 votes, I beg your pardon. Followed by I'm excited to see what the future holds. Only one person voted for Lynx is the only true browser. That was me, by the way. And whatever you have to say, and whatever browser you have to say it in, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
Part of me thinks this is a preemptive strike of both in the EU and the U.S. government wanting to break up Google. You know, it's bad enough that their advertising market, you know, controls so much of the market, and their browser share controls so much of the market. We don't like those two together.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. So by splitting off Chromium essentially in making it part of the Linux Foundation. They can use it in Chrome, but they can also point to it and say, look, Microsoft uses it in Edge. Opera uses it. Vivaldi uses it. It's not just us. It's not a monopoly.
Yeah, it's not proprietary.
Right. And it's the Chromium browser is excellent. In fact, depending on the version of Linux you're running, you get the choice of downloading Chromium itself, the Chromium browser, without any embellishment. What happens is Chromium is a browser that gets developed and published, and then Google takes it and throws Google stuff on top of it. Opera takes it and throws Opera stuff on top of it, etc. So you can download and run the pure Chromium browser experience if you want to. So there's multiple ways to get at Chromium without having to use Google. So it's a pretty wide open system, and Steve is absolutely right. Google prefers it that way because that way they can say it's not a monopoly.
Yeah, they're not being pinned into a corner.
Right, right. There's no point at which somebody's going to say, well, you're developing this, you're making this happen. Nope, it's the Linux Foundation that's making Chromium happen. We're just throwing our googly stuff on top of it, just like Microsoft throws their stuff on top of it, just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't necessarily say that we, Google, control this or are managing it in some way. I think Steve is 100% right. It's a preemptive way of preventing the EU from saying you have to divest this, because they've already kind of divested it. And the EU was saying you got to divest Chrome, which this theoretically avoids that as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they will be able to say, look, Chrome is just a skin.
Yeah. It's a product they're putting out there that anybody else can add their, other features that they would like to put on or take away.
Right. If you've ever used Vivaldi or Brave or Edge, you are using Chromium, the same underlying thing that mm-hmm. Google has, but the front end looks very different, and it does very different things. So Google can point to that and say, look, they're doing it too.
Yep.
Only it's different, so it's not a monopoly.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
Oops. Oh, hang on. That didn't.
Ooh, that was feedback.
Yeah. I need a dead eighth-inch jack. No, I don't. This is an iPhone.
Steve, I'm trying to add Dave to the home again this week.
Yeah.
And Steve, once again, at the absolute last minute, put this together so that I could be part of the show. Well done, Steve. He does amazing work every week to record and to put out this show.
I'm not on camera?
No, I'm trying to add
that's
you.
That's okay.
I tried to add you to the camera, but it won't turn off the speaker.
That's quite all right. I've always said for decades I have a face for radio. And that's the way it's
not really stay. Even that.
Nope. Not at this point in time, no. No, all right. Not at all.
I got to figure out how to stop doing what
Don't forget, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. You know, I've been using Vivaldi more and more lately. And I've been using Brave a little bit more as well. And in Vivaldi, the default search engine is DuckDuckGo.
Yeah, I love DuckDuckGo.
I am very impressed. It's what Google used to be.
Mm-hmm.
To a certain extent.
Yeah.
Not 100%.
Well, not, to a certain extent. Nothing's going to be 100%.
Right. But you get actual information. You know, nowadays, when you bring up a Google search, you end up with the whole front page's ads.
Just even look at something for more than 10 seconds, and then they're inundating you with that item because, oh, you hesitated and stopped and looked and read that one ad.
I wasn't reading that ad. I was sneezing.
Yeah.
You're right.
Or, yeah, if you stop, you know, because I usually have, you know, something to drink by my system, and it's like, yeah, I took a second to stop and maybe have a sip of coffee. Pardon me for the pause, but I do not want to keep seeing, you know, umpteen other ads about this one particular product.
Right.
But that's where DuckDuckGo, I swear by that now.
Yep. DuckDuckGo is for most searches, you get the answer you want, and you don't have to wade through ads and promoted posts and the AI business that's never right. When I look up something, it's never right.
And you know what other key feature I like about it, Nick?
What?
I can have all my tabs.
Yes.
Oh, my tabs are across the top, and you know I can click back and forth. Oh, one feature. On my wife's computer, all of a sudden, I haven't had time to look at it, but if, you know, she's using the Google Chrome, and if she clicks on something, all of a sudden it takes her, jumps her over to some other ad. And then we got to come back, you know, say, no, I don't want that. I want you to go to this page. So it's like interfering there, and I got to figure out what's going on there, but it's a pain in the butt that it jumps, yeah. You know, you're trying to go to this other site, and all of a sudden it jumps and pops up this other ad that you got to say, no, I don't want that. Close that down, and then turn around and go back to what you wanted to do.
Yep. Whereas DuckDuckGo doesn't seem to have any of that.
I think I finally convinced her to go to DuckDuckGo because, you know, like you say, it just doesn't have all that other garbage that, you know, you got to worry about that if you click here or look at that for more than 10 seconds, that you're going to be inundated with it.
By the way, we mentioned this once or twice over the months, but you can also get an email address at duck.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it hides your real address. So let's say don't anybody email this. Let's say I had nick@duck.com. It sends an email to nick@duck.com, and before it gets to me, and in the back end, I say, oh, my real address is X.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Before it gets to me, it scrubs out everything, trackers, ads,
mm-hmm.
everything, and then sends it to me. And then when I reply, it replies back through duck.com, so nobody knows my real email address.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, Apple has a service like that called Hide My Email, and yep. Google is reportedly working on such a service.
Yeah, but DuckDuckGo already has it.
Yeah, it's already there, and like I say, no other reason why not to just go right over to it, because it's got the same features as Google. I mean,
it's
found
impressive.
It, yeah, very seamless. I was able to just all of a sudden put that on my desktop, and I click on that all the time now, and all my tabs, like I said, open up with all the different stuff I want to pop to, and again, I don't have to worry about all of a sudden being hit with this ad or that ad just because I was doing a search on something. Matter of fact, one example that I just did. And because we were talking about this before, but I was looking for a device that I could use to record local channels in that. You know, because, I mean, on the service that I have with Sling, I can, you know, I get storage there. But I wanted to be able to do some of the daytime shows and, you know, 8, 10, 13, and the rest of them. And I had to be searching, you know, trying to find something. And I found this one that's called Tablo, T-A-B-L-O. And it was really cheap. I think it was only like 60, 70 bucks. But, and by the way, super easy to set up. Even added it into my Sling. And even though I was doing all the searching, I was using DuckDuckGo. I didn't get all the other ads. So, well, you try this. And then after you buy the product, then they keep inundating you. Well, maybe you should try this. I already bought it. I don't want to see it again. So, you know, it just makes it more convenient, less frustrating, because you're searching. They're taking up your time, showing you stuff that you might have already looked at, already purchased, or are no longer interested in.
Right.
So, big pain in the butt. But it's a great device, by the way, though.
It's much closer to what the internet was back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Google was just giving us results.
Yep.
It was really pretty nice, and DuckDuckGo is there now. Now, how long will that last? Who knows? Mm. But for now, it's a better deal, I think. And you can bookmark DuckDuckGo right in any browser you normally use.
Mm-hmm.
Make that, in most of them, you can select that as your default
browser
or
search engine. Yep.
And it's easy to do for most systems, and I recommend it. DuckDuckGo seems to be the better place to be right now.
Yep.
You may get better results from Google.
Do we have a caller, Dave?
No.
No, okay.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait, hold on.
Let me know, and then I can let him know.
Yep.
Or you're on camera now, so you can wave to him. Yeah.
What was I saying? Oh.
Okay, hold on.
I don't remember.
Well, DuckDuckGo has their own browser now for most OSs, too.
And right.
They have extension plugins for Chromium and Firefox.
Right. Oh, yeah, making it your default search engine. Almost every browser gives you the opportunity to pick the search engine you want to use.
Yep.
And you can pick DuckDuckGo in most.
All right, tell you what, let's we got a caller. Let's go to Mark in Greece. Go ahead, Mark.
How are you?
Go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't have your queued up.
Hey, how's everybody going? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. I'm a little off topic here. I just wanted to tell you about something that I saw. I was thinking about you because you love 3D printing. And I watched this gentleman on YouTube called DIY Perks. And he does a lot of repurposing of things, and sometimes he makes new stuff. And he was talking about wireless speakers and Bluetooth and how they compress everything. And he was trying to figure out a way to get uncompressed wireless speakers. And he took the optical out of his system he put together, and he used lasers he bought on the low powered lasers he bought on Amazon, and made this system of five speakers. Put the laser array in the center channel speaker. They shot up to the ceiling. He had mirrors. He focused them to the mirrors in the rear of the room, down to each speaker in the room, and had full, no latency, and non-compressed audio in a 5.1 system.
Wow.
Mm.
Nice.
It was the coolest thing I ever saw.
I will look it up. It sounds exactly like Overkill.
Yeah.
The best kind.
But, yeah, exactly.
Too much free time.
I'm very interested in seeing it.
Yeah, this is what this guy does. I mean, he just thinks of these things and he repurposes. He did a computer desk once that the computer was mounted underneath it, and he opened this little part and the monitor came out, and he does the neatest stuff to hide things away, ways to hide your TV when you're not using it. He does the coolest
thing. In the 1980s, before wireless.
Sorry.
No problem. So his name of the channel is DIY Perks.
Yep, and I just went there and it started playing, so apparently autoplay is enabled on my computer.
All right, thanks. That sounds it's going to be a fun.
Check it out.
We will.
It's
thanks,
the
Mark.
Weirdest things.
I do love over-engineered stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's called a lot of free time.
Well, isn't that, you know,
Rube Goldberg machine to over-engineer simple tasks?
Right. There are really two schools of engineering. The minimalist approach, where you get it done with the least amount of embellishment, and then there's the over-engineer it to the maximum. You can't have enough embellishment. Those are my favorites.
No middle ground, huh?
Right.
Oops.
When you're doing those kinds of projects to meet code and stuff like that, you take a minimalist approach. You pretty much do whatever it takes to get it done cleanly, neatly, minimum amount of work, get it done. When you're building it to play, gloves are off. Gloves are off. You just go for it. So, yeah, I'll be checking that channel out. I love that stuff.
All right, we got a caller coming on, but we got to come up to break shortly, so we'll get her after the break.
Oh, it's almost break. Wow.
Time just flies.
Wow, already. What?
Time flies.
Did you want to?
All right, we got about a minute and a half. Do you want to at least get her question, and then we can do the rest after?
Yeah, let's get the question.
We got Carolyn from Greece. Go ahead, Carolyn.
Yes, I have a question about the security Tango recommendations for Android. I saw there that you recommend Avast and AVG,
mm-hmm.
And then it also says, well, there's also malware bytes. So, how many of these am I supposed to use? Just one?
Well, see, there's Super Anti-Spyware and Malwarebytes.
Yeah.
Those are, yes, two different products, and they attack spyware and malware two different ways.
Okay.
One goes wide, one goes deep. So that's why we recommend two, because no one program can do it all. No one program does do it all.
Okay.
Successfully. So that's why we say you run both of those.
Well, but
well, okay. Hold on a second. If you look at that page, you're right. There are three things listed.
Yes.
You need one of the first two.
Okay.
Either one is fine.
Yeah.
AVG and Avast are both excellent.
Okay.
And as Dave said, those are for antivirus, but malware bytes is for other types of malware.
Okay, so I installed two things.
Two things, but not three.
Got it. Thank you very much.
There you go. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
And we got somebody on the phone. So let's
Good.
Yep. Let's go to Don in Pittsburgh. Go ahead, Don.
Yes. Hello. A couple questions. One regarding outdated drivers. I get notices on with AVG and Malwarebytes, both of which I have on my PC running Windows 10, saying you have X number of outdated drivers that need updating. Click here to do it. Is that a safe way, or is there a better way to install required updated drivers with going to another site?
Technically, you should go to the site
for that particular product.
Right. Every specific driver has their own website with their own driver updates. A lot of times Windows Update can handle third-party drivers, but generally they go there. What I would imagine Malwarebytes and AVG will do, in fact, I'm trying to see if I can find it in their list, is that they take you to those sites and download it to the download page you need for you.
It's certainly convenient to simply click on the update, I assume, and go that way trying to find the actual websites for, because I'm talking about on one computer, they say I have something like 12 or 14 drivers that
right.
are outdated. We don't use the computer very much, but my office computer we do, and I think that one has like 4 or 6 drivers that are listed.
Yeah,
and generally you want to keep your drivers updated because it's either a bug fix or a security patch that you need. Mm-hmm. The problem is people don't realize how many drivers are in the computer.
Yeah.
So
the various programs, and if you're not using that program, yeah, it's very possible that there might have been an update and the driver got updated also, and it's...
Yeah. And it could be for like your video card, your Ethernet card, your sound card, your display card. There's so many drivers mm-hmm. in the computer that need to be updated.
And so Malwarebytes rely on the built-in Windows update functionality.
Okay. So what about AVG? Is that also a safe access for updating drivers?
Yeah, AVG has its own database.
Yeah.
So Malwarebytes uses the regular Microsoft update driver update database. AVG has their own. So
and AVG's driver updater is a separate for-pay program.
Mm-hmm.
You may have it in whatever bundle of AVG you bought, but they have a driver update as a separate program.
Okay, well, I'll call up Malwarebytes. Is there any, I know you talked about this just briefly related, is there any problem of conflict with having both Malwarebytes and AVG running on the same computer?
They do different things.
Yeah.
And so they're mm-hmm. they're okay to run together.
Yeah,
you don't necessarily need to have Malwarebytes running constantly.
No.
Run it whenever you think there's an issue. Every little thing you have running, in fact, goes back to all the drivers running in the background, can end up slowing the computer down a little bit. And so cutting down on those background drivers can help speed things up.
What you might want to do is, with your Windows, over in the right-hand corner, there's usually a little up arrow. And if you click on that, and if you see that Malwarebytes is running, you can right-click on it and say, yeah, turn this off. Because like Steve was saying, you only need to run it once in a while. You just have to be constantly running in the system tray, taking up resources.
Ah, good advice. I just did that, and you were right. I thought I had the thing on call, but it does look like it is there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what do you do? Do you say quit malware bytes, or what's the choice when the menu comes up?
Yeah, just say quit malware bytes, and then...
Then you need to set it to not launch at startup.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or never restart your computer.
go into the settings of malware bytes, and you can... have it not load into the system tray.
Well, a screen came up which says, do you want to allow this app to make changes to your device?
Yes.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. So that's Windows warning you that a program is trying to change a setting in Windows.
Mm-hmm. For security.
But it's something you initiated, so it's okay. If you get that warning just sort of out of the blue,
then you
would say no.
Okay, and you are absolutely right. It's no longer in that up arrow selection.
Yep.
Once again, you guys are really good. And now, you know, I'd like to ask you one more question, and this has to do maybe with a little offbeat subject, and that is a TV screen display. It used to be with cathode ray tubes, when you froze a picture, you got a burn, kind of an implant. Is that still true with modern LCD screens?
LEDs?
Technically, yes, but it would take years and years and years and years for the same image on the screen to burn into an LCD panel. Now, the older plasma screens were almost as bad as the CRTs were, mm-hmm. but the new LCD panels and the OLED panels don't have that problem.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate the information.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Thank you.
We once bought back a whole bunch of old computers from one of our customers in you know, 8 or 10 different monitors, and every one of them had burned into the monitor. It's now safe to shut down your PC. Which Windows 3, Windows XP used to do.
Yeah.
And so they shut down the computer, but never turned it off. and for years to burn that image into the screen.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. And that used to be a problem with plasma TVs because so many channels had a little bug in the corner.
Yeah.
You know, with the logo or whatever in the corner. And you would get that burn in. From that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you watch the same channel too much.
Yeah.
Well, in the very early days, channels and you get a blurred bug image.
In the very early days, it didn't take very long at all for burn in. Right. That's why screensavers got popular because they literally would save your screen.
Right.
Yep. All right. One thing, and I'm going to go off track here. We were talking about this, I think it was last week or the week before. We were talking about SDRs. That's software-defined radios.
Yep.
Because we had a couple callers.
Well, you were talking about.
Well, no, we had a call. We had a caller call in and asked about listening to police and all these other stations.
Yes, we did.
Well, I've happened to find through this, there's plenty of pricing all over the place. And I found a company called Radiodity. It's a Chinese company that makes these radios called Bofangs. And there is a radio out there. It's called the UV5RM. And it will do up to 999 channels. You can do aviation. You can do weather. It's got Type-C charging. It's got a nice 1.7-inch screen. And you can set all your different frequencies in there to scan for both police, fire, local municipalities of whether it's highway, aviation, all that. And they're a whopping $29.99.
That's nice.
$29.99 for this radio. And Bofangs are really, because they're Chinese, they're well built, believe it or not. And they're great little radios that if you want to do that type of stuff, to have it portable. Because, like I say, you can hook it up to a USB Type-C charger. So you can always have a charger and put it in your car, and you can go off and have it scanning and listen to all these different channels that you want to listen to for a mere $30. And
that's nice.
It's a great little deal. They've got a lot of different radios there for the folks that don't have, you know, their ham license and wanted just to listen to that, like the old days of getting a Bearcat scanner. Matter of fact, I was looking at pricing for Bearcat scanners and scanners, and you can go all the way from maybe $115 up to $500 for various scanners to do the same thing that this $30 radio will do.
And the important thing that you said there was about your license.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a license to transmit.
Right.
But you do not have to have a license to listen.
Yeah. Because, see, what you're basically doing with this is they're only giving you, you know, you only put in the one code. They don't, because a lot of, and this is not to get too technical, but with repeaters in there for those ham operators, we have both a listen station and then what we call a transmit. And you're only putting in the listen part of it because there's an offset for both, you know, like for repeaters in it. In this case, you're only putting in the listening part of that particular station.
Right. So you that's do how not you get need a license for that.
Right. Correct.
And there's also a lot of times on the internet, you'll be able to find a simulcast of a show. So, like, well, we're doing a simulcast right now on YouTube, we have our Smooth Jazz Grooves and we have our Listen Live on the internet. So.
Oh yeah, they've got there's a button there. You can program all your radio stations by just hitting the button, and it'll cycle through all the radio stations that you want to have also.
And so when you're not in town or, you know, you move from town, you can still listen to your favorite radio station.
Because it's all out there on the satellites. So it's just, you know, another solution for that person that, you know, if they didn't want to be tied to their laptop or that because they could just carry this handheld. And the battery life on those usually lasted, you know, a couple days if you're running it 24/7. So
nice. And you know, I've even heard of Bofang.
Yep.
Okay, that camera's just not going to do anything it doesn't want to do, okay?
Got to give it a little purple pill?
Exactly.
But, yeah, I just, I was thinking about, you know, kind of bugged me because the guy wanted to be able to go, you know, I remember him saying that he wanted to go in his car and then go looking around and all that.
Yep. That's nice to be able to have a portable radio to do that with.
And there are a number of them out there, but I too have heard of Bofang, and I've heard good things about it. So, nice catch, Dave. Very nice catch. All right, who we got?
All right, we got Dave from Canandaigua. Go ahead, Dave.
Gentlemen, speaking of drivers, I've been chasing a blue screen problem. I called probably, a couple years ago. I don't know. So what I got here, under optional updates, optional driver updates, when you go to the Microsoft update thing there. Okay, I have 30 or 40 possible boxes to check here. Intel, other hardware, Intel Xeon. They're all Xeon. And I don't think I have a Xeon machine. But so I'm a little reluctant to try and do any of these. But maybe there's something because they do have it's a Core i7 is what is the processor I have.
That's odd. So it shouldn't show you updates for a Xeon processor.
Well, unless it sees the i7 and the Xeon is the same thing from an update standpoint. But I could do one at a time. But I'm 70 years old, and I want to get this done before I die.
Yeah.
If I, you know, had a new driver and then got a reboot and everything.
And if one of them causes a problem, you got to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I could do them all at once, and then who knows, maybe I'll never get the machine to boot again. I don't know what's going on with this. But, I mean, they've been there forever, and I've been ignoring them, but I've got this blue screen problem now. And, I don't know.
Well, it doesn't seem to me that installing a Xeon driver is a good idea if you don't have a Xeon processor.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what are they. Xeon, X-E-O-N?
Yeah, X-E-O-N. Not, okay, Intel, Xeon A with a circle over E7, and it says V2/Xeon, with an R in parentheses, E5V2/Core i7. It's like they're the same thing as far as the update is concerned.
Maybe the update is for both processors.
Right.
Well, that's...
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, you guys are willing to gamble with my machine, right?
No, why not?
Back everything up.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, based on that, I will kind of plop, but maybe I'll try them one at a time. And if the first couple don't fail, then I'm do the rest all at once. And I will do a backup, you know, whatever.
Yeah, just save that data.
Yep.
Yeah, backup. Well, make sure you've got a good backup. And then I would go for it. It sounds like Steve is right. It sounds like the driver is for either. And so you do need to do the update. If it mentions your chip, you should do the update.
Yeah.
But as an optional update, that's interesting. If sometimes it will give a KB number where you can look up and see what that update does and whether you need that or not. See, that's the why is it optional is the question. Yeah.
Right.
Hmm.
Well, I will do that restore point and plunge ahead.
There you go.
And good luck.
Who knows? All right. Thanks, guys.
With your shielder on it, let us know what happens.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of updates for Windows have just such weird names.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it makes sense to somebody in the back room at Microsoft, God bless them. But out here in the real world, it's a little confusing. And, you know, all you can do is pray, I guess.
Scratch your head and wonder.
Yeah. And if they're optional, you probably don't need to install them until they become required. Remember that Windows 11 was an optional update to Windows 10 for a while.
Right.
Then it became a mandatory update.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's a real... Microsoft has not done us any favors by labeling things the way they have. When you have multiple sets of possible hardware that is maintained by the same driver, but you only have one of those, right? So it may well be that there's an update that is good for Xeon and also good for i7. But rather than Microsoft saying, you have an i7, you should have this, they say, well, here's something that's good for every possible Intel product across the board for the last 30 years. Go ahead if you want to.
Yeah, good luck. Let us know how you make out.
That's probably because there's so much co-development, and a lot of the code in different chips could be similar.
Yeah, very, very few chips are entirely new. They build on the old chips.
Yeah, the old.
But we've seen this with Windows itself, right? I mean, the heart of Windows is still XT. The XT kernel is still at the heart of Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And so so this stuff never dies.
No, they just make subtle changes to it.
Right, and so you end up at a point where you've got this much of this code and this much of this code and this much of this code, So here's a here's an update that hits all of that and these other five things as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to tell you that.
Right.
Okay. That doesn't help me any. And I do, I get it. It is very likely that the code in that chip is a universal piece of code that goes across all the products. So Dave should be okay.
That's a big should.
That's a should
yeah.
be.
Yeah. With a big question mark.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is he says he's having a blue screen issue. That's usually a broken driver, so an update might fix it, but you got to know which driver it is and that needs to be updated.
Right, and Microsoft doesn't deal with that very well. They're just, here's a whole bunch of updates. Just throw them all in, see what works.
Yeah. It's like, throw it up against the wall and see what sticks.
Exactly. That's not necessarily the right way to go about it, but it's the only way you're going to go about it under Windows. So, well, you know, Dave doesn't have a lot of choice if he wants to keep his machine running.
Well, that's the problem, though, too. I mean, and I hate to admit that I'm saying this, but Microsoft's defense, the combination and permutations of different machines, you know, motherboards versus mm-hmm. video cards versus this, you know, I mean, the chipsets and everything else, and you're mixing and matching all these different combinations.
Infinite diversity and infinite combinations.
Yeah, I mean, it's mind-boggling, and trying to come up with something that'll still stably, you know, work stably on, you know, with some stableness of operating.
And then on top of that, there's the issue that the Xeon processor chips reached end of life in the middle of last year.
Yeah. And then within it, just to interrupt you for a second, and then with even within those chips, the different versions.
Yep.
I mean, it's mind-blowing.
Yep. So, you know, the reality is that hardware ages out, right? You bought a Xeon processor a few years ago. It was the hottest thing since laser sliced bread. It was great.
Uh-huh.
And now it's end of life.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do?
One of those whole hum moments.
Running it.
Well, and Intel is under pressure to keep putting out newer and faster chips. And so this year they're 2% faster than last year, but we got a different name for them.
Right.
Well, it's no different than Windows. I mean, all they're doing is moving the icons around and changing the screen look and feel, but underneath it's still the same GD program as Windows 7.
Well, it's like I said in the poll. How much more can you do with a browser?
Yeah.
We don't know until they tell us.
Right. Well, right. But
that's,
I mean,
that's the Apple line.
If you go to Chrome OS, it's an entire operating system, and you can do everything in it. Everything. Like I've said many times, I know a guy who edits video and audio professionally on a Chromebook. So, you know, there's very little you can't do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how much more do you need to do? And yet, things keep aging out. Part of that is there's new hotness. I get that. And you can't spend company resources continually supporting something that no longer makes you money.
Well, that's the big thing right there. It's not, you know, so much changing stuff around. It's making other things happen that will drive more sales so that it keeps the shareholders happy.
Yep. Yep.
That's the bottom line.
Right there.
Yeah, it's the bottom line.
All right. That music tells us that the first hour of this show is in the books. It is history. It is gonzo. But do not despair. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright. A whole nother hour of Steve Ray. A whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, and that was never 60 seconds under any circumstances. I don't care what anybody says. So you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. In the meantime, I'll read up on Apple. Apple is facing fresh calls to withdraw its controversial artificial intelligence feature that has generated inaccurate news alerts on its latest iPhones. The product is meant to summarize breaking news notifications, but has in some instances invented entirely false claims. The BBC first complained to Apple about its journalism being misrepresented in December, but Apple did not respond until Monday of this week when it said that it was working to clarify that summaries were AI-generated, which is, of course, not the point of the complaint. Alan Rushbridger, former editor of The Guardian, said Apple needed to go further and pull a product that he said was clearly not ready. Mr. Rushbridger, who also sits on Meta's oversight board that reviews appeals of the company's content moderation decisions, added the technology was out of control and posed a considerable misinformation risk. Trust in news is low enough already without giant American corporations coming in and using it as a kind of test product. Get off of my lawn. The National Union of Journalists, one of the world's largest unions for journalists, said Apple must act swiftly and remove Apple intelligence to avoid misinforming the public, echoing prior calls by journalism body Reporters Without Borders. They also said Apple's intervention was insufficient and has repeated its demand that the product is taken offline. The BBC complained last month after an AI-generated summary of its headline falsely told some readers that Luigi Mangione, the man accused of killing UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson, had shot himself. He did not, by the way. On Friday, Apple's AI inaccurately summarized BBC app notifications to claim that Luke Littler had won the PDC World Darts Championship hours before it began, and that the Spanish tennis star Rafael Nadal had come out as gay, which he had not. This marks the first time Apple has formally responded to the concerns voiced by the BBC about the errors, which appear as if they are coming from within the organization's app. These AI summarizations by Apple do not reflect, and in some cases completely contradict, the original BBC content, the BBC said on Monday. It is critical that Apple urgently addresses these issues, as the accuracy of our news is essential in maintaining trust. In November, a ProPublica journalist highlighted erroneous Apple AI summaries of alerts from the New York Times app, suggesting it had reported that Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had been arrested. He had not. A further inaccurate summary of the New York Times story appears to have been published on January 6th, relating to the fourth anniversary of the Capitol riots. On Tuesday, Reporters Without Borders said Apple's plan to update the news to further clarify when notifications are summarized with AI users doesn't fix the problem at all. So, do you trust Apple's AI news summaries? Why or why not? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415.
I'd be interested to know about why the AI summary is coming up with these alternate facts.
Yeah, some of the stuff that's being fed.
Yeah.
Well, it's the hallucination problem
mm-hmm.
that they have. AIs misinform. They lie, and they're calling them hallucinations. They're lies, but they're calling them hallucinations. And it means that AI sometimes make stuff up and cannot be trusted.
Don't anthropomorphize AI. They hate that.
They hate that. So there's a one of the things that I don't like currently about Google is that when you search for something, particularly if I'm searching for programming tips on things, the first thing that comes up is an AI-generated thing to try, and it is always wrong. It has never been right for me once. It tells me to use libraries that do not exist. Not that I don't have, that do not exist. I cannot find them anywhere. Or it tells me to use this piece of code and you copy and paste that piece of code, and the thing comes up and says, I don't know half of these words. What is this? So there's a real problem with AI hallucinating that hasn't been solved and has been glossed over.
Well, the problem is it's doing the same thing people do. You mishear something, you misunderstand, or someone tells you something and you believe it to be true, so you repeat it on. So maybe it is artificial intelligence.
Selective hearing.
Maybe. But the reality is that they are relying on this stuff to do certain things that it cannot do. So Apple is relying on artificial intelligence to summarize news and hand it to people. And if it's hallucinating, that's bad. And the more people it lies to, the worse it gets. And I get that Apple wants Apple intelligence, in everything, all the time, 24/7, but they got to get their act together.
Yeah, just like every other company, but Apple seems to be behind everybody else.
Right.
Well, and part of that, a lot of people think is the problem, that Apple is behind everybody else, so they're rushing stuff to market to appease their shareholders, saying, you know, we have that too.
Right. It's a lot of me too. A lot of me too. And I get it. AI is the new hotness. But I don't know that it's ready for prime time, and I don't know that it really deserves to be in everything. I don't need my microwave to have AI.
At least they didn't say it's still in beta, suck it up.
Yeah.
Right.
Google's been known to say that. Leave something in beta for 20 years, and then any errors, well, it's just still in beta.
Right, right. That's a more honest approach.
Yep.
It's still beta. There's going to be problems.
All right, let's go.
At least they know it.
Okay, we got Jerry from Webster on the phone. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yes, hi, guys. I'm trying to install a security camera. It's an older camera, and I'm getting to the point where I'm almost getting to get it to work, but it says it's the camera network is an unsecured network, and I don't want to really proceed with that if it's unsecured. I wonder how I can secure it.
You need to put a password on your network to secure the network.
Well, I have a password on my to log in and everything with the camera and a username and everything.
No, a password on the Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
On the camera Wi-Fi?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Then I'll have to have it connected to the house Wi-Fi, I guess, after that, correct?
Right.
Yes.
So, is this a Nest camera?
No, it's not. It's a, I think it's a German camera that I got, Maganon, the name of it.
Okay, so many of these types of devices use their own networks. And if you don't properly secure them, it allows someone access into your network. So read the directions carefully and set up a password on your network, and also set up a password on the Wi-Fi, excuse me, on the camera network.
Yeah, otherwise anyone driving by,
when you connect the two, you won't have a problem.
Yeah, anyone driving by could log in to see your camera if there's no password on the camera network. If your home router has the option for a guest network or an isolated private network, it's best to put the cameras and other things on that network so that if someone does break into the camera, they can't get into your home network.
Oh, I see.
So most newer routers do have an isolated guest network option.
Okay. But I have to put a password on the camera network system somehow.
Yes.
Somehow. That's we see that with many, many, many home automation devices. They do not have good security, and that's how people are breaking into people's home networks.
Yeah. So theoretically, that should be in the manual on how to add that password to the camera network.
Yeah. The manual doesn't give it much information on that, but I'm a little nervous about that whole secure network system. But if I get the password in the camera network, then I'll have to connect it to the house network, regular network here, I guess, to get it to work.
To get to the Internet, yeah. If you want to see your cameras outside the house. If you don't want to see the cameras outside the house, then you don't need to connect it to your home network.
Well, that's one reason why I got it, to see the cameras remotely.
Keep an eye on things.
Yeah, keep an eye on things, so... Okay, I'll have to look in to see how to make that password on the camera Wi-Fi network then somehow.
Yep.
All right. Well, we'll give it a shot. Thank you very much.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
Yeah,
we've seen over the years a lot of those home automation things, everything from thermostats, cameras, all kinds of things, just don't have any security. And they let hackers break into your home network. It's not even breaking in.
Yeah.
It's a wide open network.
And oftentimes they're fly-by-night companies that created, sold a million cameras and then disappeared. So the cameras never get any updates when a problem is found.
Yep.
So it's usually best to go with a name brand camera. Although, eventually there's out of service. There was a big mess with D-Link a couple months ago that a very serious bug was found in a bunch of their older routers. But they're all, 10 years old, discontinued, no updates are going to be made for them. So, stop using that router is their answer.
Yeah, basically that's the answer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to the phones. We got Dan from Gates on the line. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, guys. Great listening to you every week. I just got a little problem. It's kind of amusing, but it's irritating, too. I've noticed a couple sites lately, mostly banking sites. I might want to take a screenshot of it, and it's disabled, but what really kind of is frosting my berries a little bit is the fact that they say it's disabled by your administrator, but I'm the administrator. And, I don't know, don't they know I can take a picture of that, too? So I just wondered if there's any way around it. It's an Android, of course, and what you think about that. I know it's for security, but I don't know. I'll listen to you guys and tell me what you think, okay?
Yeah, there are a lot of sites that prevent screenshots for security purposes. You're absolutely right about that. You're also absolutely right that if you're sitting at your computer or your phone or whatever, you can figure out a way to take a screenshot of those data anyway. So it's a kind of a mess, but the reality is it's specifically designed to at the very least make you think twice before you decide to do something. What they would prefer is that you download the data as a PDF rather than take a screenshot.
Or print it.
Yeah.
What?
Or print it. Yeah. So the other possibility is that your phone has been infected with MDM software, mobile management. Was this phone issued by a company by any chance, or is it your?
Oh no, this is a Pixel.
Yeah.
Everything on it, I put on it. I have done some detective work in the past on Android and successful. Like, do you want to remember your password? Yes, and every time it comes up, it's all asterisks, and it won't show it. And I forgot what it was, but I did go down a couple levels, and it's in there. It was in a file, I think, called the supplicant file. But I'm not having any success trying to turn up. You know, I'm the administrator. Why can't? Where are they getting in here and making my screenshot not work? It's just my question.
Yeah, it may be that there is an administration program got installed by malware. I'm posting a link on how to see if there's admin software in your phone, because I've seen that on the Macs Apple devices that get called profiles, and someone can install a malicious profile. It's usually a news site. Do you want to get the latest news or sports scores? And you say yes, and it installs this malicious profile and then does who knows what to the rest of your surfing.
Okay, thank you for that. I'll look at that post. I appreciate it.
Yep.
I know it's all for my own good, but I don't like them doing the administrator's job.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you.
Okay.
I agree with you. But it's a lot of companies. WhatsApp is doing it, for example, for security.
So someone can't take a screenshot of your password.
Right.
Just so, like everything else, to stop the bad guys from doing something bad is hurting you from doing something you want to do. They're ruining our fun.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks. And in fact, if he's got WhatsApp, maybe he should look to see if that's where the issue's coming.
Yeah.
Did you hear the FBI the other day? Because of the Chinese hackers in our phone system that got in because the FBI demanded a back door to our phone system, 10 years, 20 years ago now? So to allow wiretapping on the phones, there's basically a back door into all phone systems. Chinese hackers figured that out, and they've been in all the major phone systems for years now, and it's just now being caught. The FBI and Homeland Security are saying you should start using encrypted communications, but only responsible encryption that lets us have a back door.
But right.
Back door is what caused this problem in the first place. If there's a way for anyone to get in, there's a way for everyone to get in. So you cannot have a back door.
Right. It's a real problem. I understand the need for Homeland Security. I understand the need to be able to catch criminals and terrorists and et cetera, but we have to understand that that also lets in the bad guys, and we have to decide which is worse. So far, the decision is that let everybody in. That's the result of saying we need a back door.
Yeah. Or some law gets passed with no concern about how to implement it. Was it Australia, the whole country? They just banned anyone 16 and under from social media. Well, how in the world do you do that?
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
It's like one hand clapping.
Yeah. So you go to log into Facebook, and it asks if you're over 16, and you say yes.
Yeah.
So, well, no, that's illegal. Right. You can't do that. Well, then how do we stop it? You know, there's no technical way to stop that.
Mm-mm.
There was an interesting attempt in Britain a couple years ago to access adult websites. You had to go into a bar where you're legally able to drink, show your ID to show that you're of age, and then the bar was somehow supposed to tell the websites that you are of age. to let you onto adult website. And that never worked, and they gave up.
Well, a lot of states tried to ban Pornhub.
Mm-hmm.
The way Pornhub responded was to just cut out all access to those states. You can't, nobody, doesn't matter if you're 55 or 15,
mm-hmm.
no Pornhub for you.
17 U.S. states are currently banned because there is no way to enforce an age restriction. There's no way to verify that the information they're giving you is true.
Right. And if there were, it would be horribly intrusive.
Yeah.
Prove you're over 21 by turning on your camera and letting someone see your face. Well, A, screw you. I don't want you to know who I am. Yeah. On any website.
Mm-hmm. That's an invasion of privacy. Yep.
I'm not talking about porn. I'm talking about any website. And secondly, yes, clearly I'm over 21, but I know people who are in their 30s and look 20.
Yeah. And I've read of some. Steve Gibson was just talking about getting his Bimmy logo on email. They made him hold up his driver's license to in front of his face and then wave his finger around to show that it was a live video and not a picture. And he's thinking, to get my logo in my email, that's a ridiculous requirement. But then you can't tell if the driver's license is fake or not. How many bars have been able to kick people out for a fake driver's license?
Right. Especially with the holograms and all that other stuff that big, built in. How are you going to see that all that on the camera?
Yeah, big tip, never use February 30th as your date of birth.
Wait, hold on, let me write that down.
Yeah.
Or September 31st.
September 31st, yeah, that's a big giveaway. So I admire the gall of the forger who takes your money to give you a fake ID, knowing that it won't get confiscated the first time you try to use it. What are you going to do, complain to the criminal that they did a bad job?
Hey, you did this wrong. So? Give me another, $100. I'll get you another one.
Yep. There's just no simple way, no cost-effective way, and no privacy protective way of verifying someone's age or identity over the internet. I've been telling you people for decades, I'm Nick Francesco. Do you actually know that?
You've kept that ruse up pretty well, though.
Thank you.
Well, hey, we've also been fooling folks for what, 35 years, telling them we know what we're talking about?
Well, I think they've caught on to that. But yeah, it's the long con, baby. It's the long con. It's the internet was never designed for any sort of verification. The verification was supposed to happen at the other end, right? Mm-hmm. Originally, it was email, and you couldn't get an email address unless you were known to the administrators at the other end, right? Because it was just 4, 5, 7, and eventually universities and the DOJ.
Mm-hmm.
And they would say, okay, oh, Steve Ray, yeah, he works as a researcher and he's working on a DARPA project. We'll give him an email address. So when Steve Ray wrote to somebody at DARPA, that person was pretty well assured that Steve Ray was who he says he was and was doing what he was supposed to be doing. But now any jamoke on the internet can get an email address and be anybody.
Yep, no one on the internet can tell you're not a dog.
Yeah.
Right.
Opposable thumbs help, though.
That helps. I was on Blue Sky and John Scalzi followed me.
Oh, wow.
Well, for about 10 seconds, I thought, oh, wow. And then I thought, really? Why would John Scalzi is a well-known, well-respected science fiction author. why would he follow me?
He probably got a news alert that his name was mentioned and went to check us out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe, but what happened was the guy started to talk to me, and all he wanted to talk about was Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Fake. And I thought, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, all right. So, yeah, you got to be careful. You got to be aware. That was the whole idea behind the blue checks.
Yep.
Right? On Facebook and on Twitter, and back when we had Twitter and all of that, you got the blue check when you verified that you were you. And it was a fairly exhaustive process to verify that you were actually you and you deserved a blue check mark. But nowadays, pretty much, again, any jamoke on the internet,
yeah,
you can buy a blue check mark from edX.
Yeah, that was how.
So what's the point?
That was how website security was initially done, and why security certificates used to cost a fortune is that the companies would go to lengths to make sure you are who you say you are, and you control the domain, and there's someone at that phone number that says it's that phone number. But then too many SSL companies started coming online and just realizing they could print money by charging someone just a little bit less than the other company and make a fortune. So that sort of is all fallen about. And then the browsers that used to warn us when a site was encrypted is now warning us when it's not encrypted. So it doesn't matter anyway.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes, 30 seconds from now, with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in a few.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites.
And,
you know, to continue what we were talking about earlier, okay. The weirdest thing. When I was setting up my newsletter, my weekly newsletter, they kept saying, we can't verify that you aren't a spammer. We need to know how people get on your newsletter list. I pointed them three separate times at the page that says, if you want to join my newsletter, it's going to cost you $25 a year.
What part of that didn't they get?
It's the ultimate opt-in.
Yeah.
Right?
Not just click the link, not just, you know, you got to actually pull
shell
out your credit
out some
card
money.
Yeah.
And they finally were like, oh, okay.
Yeah, really.
But. And I do get it. I do get it. One of the easiest ways to inundate people is to have a site that just grabs email addresses. I understand that. I truly do. But, you know, opt in via your wallet is probably the most correct way to opt in. It was pretty funny to me. They kept saying, but how do you gather, look at the page.
it was an AI robot.
All right, so let's go back to the phones. Don from Pittsburgh's back. Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, getting back to a subject we discussed in the first hour, I took notes, but apparently not enough. We were talking about Malwarebytes, AVG, Total AV, and you said a super antivirus spyware.
No.
Is that
we said comparable? super anti-spyware is the name of the program.
Okay, not right. Now, does that correspond to Malwarebytes or to AVG or Total AV?
Totally different.
Well, it's similar to Malwarebytes in that it finds malicious software, but it mm-hmm. goes deep into the registry, where Malwarebytes goes wide across the computer. So both of those are generally recommended to have. Don't need to be running them all the time, but run them now and then.
Do you recommend putting both on a PC?
Yes.
Yes.
And then, in addition, AVG?
Right, yes. An antivirus program is another class of malware.
So you have three types of problems. You have viruses, you have malware in general, and you have spyware. So you have AVG for viruses, Malwarebytes for regular malware, and super anti-spyware for spyware.
And there's no conflict with having three on one PC.
Correct.
Right, because they're doing different things.
Great.
And they're not all running all the time. You only run, like Steve said, the Malwarebytes and super anti-spyware maybe, you know, maybe once a week.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
I read.
Very good. I would like very much to contact Dave Enright, the ham expert, about a couple high-end receivers I have. Dave, how do I get in touch with you?
You can reach me at dave@jazz901.org.
Okay. All right. We'll do. I'd like to talk with you directly. Okay. Thanks again,
Jim. We'll set something up. I'll send you my number and all that, and we'll connect.
Okay. It's Dave at, say again.
Dave@jazz901.org.
Okay. 901.org. Okay. Great.
Thank you. All right.
Thanks much.
Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye.
I heard an interesting meme. I read in a stream meme the other day that everything is now spyware. So every program you install spies on you in some way. Your browser spies on you. Your operating system spies on you. Your ISP spies on you. So we can't stop spyware. We've just come to accept it. But malicious spyware.
Less so on Linux.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not entirely wrong. Every program, many programs at least, have some sort of ulterior motive, and report something back to their owners.
Yeah, that's always the trade-off for getting the free software. They're getting their money somewhere else. They either have a pay version of it, or you know, they're spying on something.
Yep. All right, let's go back to the phones. We got Francis from Webster. Go ahead, Francis.
Yeah, hi. You were talking earlier about annoying ads and things on the internet or browsing. And something that I remembered is, like, when I go to Lowe's.com or HomeDepot.com and look up a drill, and then it'll say, oh, you probably want these three other things, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be another drill and drill bits and maybe hedge trimmers. And they're all checked, though.
Yep.
Your total is $200. And if you want to purchase the one item you looked up, you first have to deselect all the additional items they add.
Yeah.
Yep.
And if anybody else finds that annoying, please contact Lowe's and Home Depot and complain about it.
Well, general for every website that sells something now has these suggestions and recommendations. I see it on Amazon all the time, too.
Yes, but Amazon won't select it for you.
Right. So what he's saying is when he goes to that particular website, it picks it. So if he's not paying attention and he says, okay, I want to buy that drill, he also gets the bits, he also gets the case, he also gets...
Yep. I see that on Amazon all the time, too. Everything I search for, it finds all these other things, and and they're all checked for me to buy.
Yep.
No thanks.
Yep.
Okay. Amazon I find I have to check it if I want it. It suggests other things, but I don't have to, check it or uncheck it. If I left something in my list or something and I didn't remove it from an old search, it might show up in my cart.
Yeah, you know, I see.
But otherwise, they're pretty good. They're better than Home and Lowe's. Yeah. Home and Lowe's.
Frequently bought together, and they're all checked. So that $20 thing I wanted to look at now says $120. Yeah. Thank you, Amazon. And no, I don't want that.
Yeah, you got it. All right. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks. Also, who are the people who are buying these things? Because sometimes you get the weirdest combinations of stuff. Nobody bought that with this. Nobody.
Maybe it's sold by the same company and they have a blanket advertising deal.
Or it is possible that somebody bought a jacuzzi and a carport at the same time, but that doesn't mean I want to. It's not a normal thing that people are going to buy.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We got Bill from Greece. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi, guys. A Linux problem I'm having. I put in PC Linux OS, and I've got an Epson printer, and it won't see the Epson printer. It won't show drivers for it. I used to go to Epson and be able to download the drivers, but when I go to Epson now, the driver page is grayed out. You can't download the drivers. The only other thing I found was to pay $50 to TurboPrint to buy drivers. Do you know another way that I can get drivers from my printer for the Linux?
What Epson printer do you have?
It's a 970. It's about a four-year-old printer. It's not a new printer.
Yeah.
So, well, first question is, why is the link dimmed? It should be there.
I don't know. I think Epson just decided to stop handing out the Linux drivers. You can see everything, but you can't. You click on it, and nothing happens.
Okay, I'm on that page right now, and I see exactly the problem you're having. And the reason is, at the bottom of the page, there's a blue bar that wants you to accept your cookies before you're allowed to download anything.
Oh. So you can,
and I must have already accepted them because I got right to the button that says download drivers.
Right.
Yeah, I've got a cookie blocker.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah,
so you're not seeing that. Because once I said I don't want any of your stinking cookies, up it came and I could download whatever I want to download.
Or you have to accept the required cookies first.
You know,
I always hate that. There's required cookies and then
extra
cookies. Yeah. How about just no?
You know, I've been listening to you guys since Bob Smith, and you're still the best.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'd love to hear that. Thank you.
Yeah, that's the problem with cookie blockers. If you block too much, websites stop working.
Right.
And
who?
The ad blockers that a lot of people run to. Just today, I've got a dozen websites that said, please turn off your ad blocker when I was trying to look up something to post a link. So it's, well, yeah, the ad blocker is trying to block the ads, but I want to see that website too. Well, and that's the trade-off we made. The most of the web is free because you're supposed to watch the ads.
Yep.
And nobody's figured out a way to make money off the web except for ads.
Yep.
So far.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We got Walter from Greece. Go ahead, Walter.
Hello there, gentlemen. I have a Dell Inspiron 15 3000 laptop. It came with Windows 10 on it. I installed MX Linux on it, so it's a dual boot. Now I want to get rid of Windows 10 because we have a new machine. It has Windows 11 on it. I've looked at the internet and found some instructions from ostechnics.com. It has some nice instructions of how to use gparted to get rid of things. Well, I have more partitions that are NTFS file system on there, and I don't know if I should get rid of them or not. I have the ones they tell me to get rid of, which is the Microsoft Reserve partition, get rid of the basic data partition, which is NTFS, but I also have now an NTFS that says WinRetools, then there's an NTFS partition that says image, and then there's an NTFS Dell support. Now, I think the Dell support one is is the diagnostics in case there's something goes wrong with this laptop. But can I get rid of the other ones, the WinRE tools and the image?
The image,
yeah, basically. Sorry, go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just going to say the image is just in case you had to reinstall Windows. So it's your version of Windows in a hidden partition. So if you had to do a restore.
So they don't have to include CDs anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I can get rid of that because that's, it's about 11 gig. So give me a little more space.
And you won't need the tools if you're not running. If you're not running Windows, the tools aren't going to do you any good.
Okay. So I can get rid of them. Good. But what about the Dell support? Does that affect anything?
Well, I suspect that this machine is out of warranty anyway.
Yes, it is.
So your Dell support isn't going to do you a lot of good.
Okay, I thought it was the diagnostic stuff that I've seen on stuff that you can go ahead, click on it, and it'll test out the CD drive, your screen, et cetera, like that.
You can get other utilities to do that.
Okay, well, it's pretty small. It's only 1 gig, so it's like not a problem to me because this thing is, what is it, it's about 500 gig hard drive. So.
Yeah, leave the 1 gig then.
Okay. All right, so the other ones that I labeled NTFS, I can get rid of as well as the other ones. And, of course, I'll be keeping the EFI system partition, the FAT32 one.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Thank you very much. You know what to do. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Right. So what he was talking about was he was dual booting, so he had two different operating systems on the drive. Now he wants to get rid of one of them, but that one had all kinds of cruft added into it, and some good stuff too. So the question was, keep the cruft, keep the good stuff, delete it all, and just run Linux. I know what my answer would be.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We got Carl from Ithaca. Go ahead, Carl.
Hey, thanks. Love the show, guys.
Thanks.
Quick question. I inherited an older iPad. I think it's maybe 10 years old. I set up an Apple account because I'm not an Apple person. I set up an Apple account so that I could activate it and access the internet. But it won't allow any updates. So I'm just wondering, is there anything that I can do with this now, or is it basically just e-waste?
Well, you can run any program it came with, and you can run any program that's compatible with the OS that's on it. But there is a time when devices won't accept any new OS updates. Do you know what model it is offhand?
I don't. I don't have it with me right in front of me. But I do because I'm not an Apple person. I'm more of an Android Google. So
that's the same kind of thing. Eventually, your Android phone won't accept an update, and your Chromebook won't accept an update.
Okay, so just basic like web surfing, you know, like Google and YouTube, is that still safe to do, even though like the browser isn't getting updates and security patches or whatever?
Depends on what kind of website you go to. Some websites won't work if your security is too far out of date.
Okay. Okay, so if I go to Google and YouTube and they work, then obviously I can keep using it, I guess, right? Even though it's not really secure, I don't want to be doing anything secure over it, I guess.
Right, you'll get warning messages if it doesn't support the security.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's one of the problems with older devices that eventually they can't be updated to anything current anymore. With a general-purpose computer, you're often able to install something else, like Chrome OS Flex on a general purpose computer, but tablets and phones are usually pretty specific to their OSs.
Yeah, I don't know that a 10-year-old device is going to be secure, but I also don't know that a 10-year-old device can be really hacked deeply. So. Most viruses and stuff like that will be looking for something more modern.
And most of the threats these days are fake virus warnings trying to trick you into calling tech support. So those are easy to ignore.
Be fine.
Yep.
All right, let's go back to the phones to James from Rochester. Go ahead, James.
Hi, Dave, Nick, and Steve. Best show, hi, as always.
Thank you.
Yes, they removed the My Yahoo homepage where I had it for a long time, and you can set all your own content that you wanted, like sports, pick your favorite teams, stocks, and whatever. Do you know if it's coming back or if there's a comparable replacement that I can set up a homepage like the old My Yahoo used to have?
I don't know if all of the features are available, but there is a product called ProtoPage. ProtoPage, ProtoPage.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, what was that noise? What happened there?
Nothing.
Just static in the background, I think.
Oh, okay.
Probably my phone.
And that lets you set up a lot of things, not all of them identical to My Yahoo, but mm-hmm. there would be stuff you'd be able to set up ball scores and things like that. So at least take a look at it and see what you think.
Yeah, it's been about a month.
It's free to use.
Huh.
It's free to use, so, you know, yeah. Can't hurt to play with it.
Yeah, I will. Why did they remove that? Yahoo going through a transformation or something?
Just somebody in the back room decided this is the way it needs to be now.
They might not have had enough people using it to make it worth the programming effort.
Uh-huh. Yes. All right. I will look into that. And thank you for the excellence in broadcasting.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. Have fun. I have a proto page of my own. I very much like what it has available. It's very clean. It's very neat. You can put tabs, put different things on different tabs. Just all kinds of really good stuff. I'm very impressed with what they did with it. Proto page. A lot of people use it for their start page.
Yeah, I found a message that Yahoo had sent out that they're using AI to determine what you think is important and show that to you on the main Yahoo website.
Of course they are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But how does it know? So Yahoo's going to track everything you do on the internet, so it knows what you want.
I am already tired of AI. Can I say that out loud?
Yeah.
I am tired of AI. I don't need AI telling me what to do. I need AI to do what I tell it to do.
And it can't be trusted.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And it can't be trusted. I don't want AI to write my code so I have more time to wash the dishes. I want AI to wash the dishes so I have more time to write the code. It's all backwards. They're taking the things that I want to do and giving them to AI, leaving me with the stuff I don't want to do. Get me an AI robot that washes my car. Now we're talking. I don't need one that drives my car.
There was an old, probably Asimov story about a guy who had a friend who was a writer and was always complaining about he didn't have enough time to write anything. And so this guy happened to know a demon and had the demon fix it so that the guy never had to wait for anything. If he walked up to an elevator, the door opened. I mean, when he set down his fork, the waiter appeared with the check. Never had to wait for anything anymore. So give the guy all the time he wanted to write. Come to him 6 months later, he gave up writing because now he doesn't have any time to think about what to write because everything's always ready for him.
Yep, yep.
Be careful what you wish for.
Exactly. But, yeah, I get it. These companies, once one company says, oh, we have AI, suddenly everybody's got to have AI. They got to have it. I get that. But throwing mud on the wall doesn't make it a better wall. Figure out what good things AI can do for you then add AI. Like, you know, great. Can you give me a hands-free car? That's terrific. You know what? But I know how to drive. What I want is somebody, what I want is a machine that'll wash my car. I want a machine that'll tune up my car, although nobody tunes a car anymore.
There's a whole,
those are the things I want.
There's a whole section in the Aeon 14 book series called The Sentience Wars, when the AIs became sentient and didn't like being slaves anymore. So did that, you know, the Frankenstein complex. They decide, yep, well, we don't want you humans bossing us around anymore.
Perfectly fair.
Yep.
I don't like this trend. I just don't. Does that make me a curmudgeon? Well, I've always been a curmudgeon. But I just don't, I don't see the true advantage of AI in most things. The Apple story today, AI is hallucinating and lying to people. That can't be good. And if AI can lie on at Apple, it can lie at Yahoo. It can lie at pretty much everybody. So we really need to worry about not just, you know, is AI going to take over the world? That's probably not happening any day soon. But is AI lying to us and making the world a worse place? All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I really want to thank everybody who called in. Excellent, excellent questions this week. And we will see you next week on the longest running computer show. Oh, can I do this? Is this a thing now? I don't have that. We'll see you next week on the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you, for Pete's sake? In real life.